It is time for the Interstate of Music podcast, and I am your host, Jeff Peterson. And with me today, I've got, I mean, this is going to be a very, so I'm not the techiest of guys. So I'm going to learn a lot during this podcast myself. So I'm going to ask some of the, maybe some of the most basic questions ever asked to you. But I'm so intrigued by your bio and some of the things that are going on. I've got today the CEO at Sound Particles. And Sound Particles is a software, from what I can tell, and we'll dig deeper into this later in the podcast, but most of all the major Hollywood studios are using this software. I don't know if a viewer would notice or understand what it's all about, but it's been on Game of Thrones, Frozen 2, Star Wars 9. It's got some oomph to it, and I want to know all about it. Nuno, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's so much I want to know about what Sound Particles is all about, but I want all of our listeners and our viewers to know a little bit more about you personally. So, you know, you've got all of this amazing resume, but I want to know what got you to this point. When did you start to become kind of like into the software world? Like, where was that energy? Were you in high school, college? Where did you start to realize this is the type of world that you wanted to be in?
So I always had this duality, because I had this passion for technology, but at the same time, a passion for music and sound. And I even recall do one of those tests that you do on high school to see what is the best career for you. And I got the exact same score for engineering and musician. So it was always this duality. I had, of course, some music lessons when I was younger, but I was mainly a self-taught kind of person that liked to buy some books and read books and learn more about this and that. And when it was time to go to college, I was indecising. At the moment, there weren't any kind of audio-related degrees in Portugal. So I went to engineering. There was only music, but with a huge number of music background. So I decided, okay, I'm going to engineer. But still, when I was taking the engineer degree, I was still attending some music classes like orchestration and composition. So this duality was always present in my life. And now I do exactly that. I'm doing this bridge and having the technology and creating technology that can be used for artists and musicians and all of that.
What was your high school experience like, as far as where did music come in for you? Were you like wanting to be in a band? What was the first instrument that you kind of started? I see in the background a little bit of, you know, electric guitar, violin, keyboards. What got you into actually playing music? And was it something that you really kind of honed in on in your high school, you know, career and that kind of thing? Did you want to be in a band? Like, what was that for you?
So I've started probably around, I don't know, 11 years old, when a friend of mine had a keyboard and she played for some time now. And it was a passion at first sight, and said, no, I want also to do that and try. And then my parents bought me a keyboard, an organ, a digital organ. So I started to play with that. Later on, especially during our teen years, okay, guitar, it's always great. At that time, I was also attending at the Scouts. So, okay, it's a fire and guitars and people singing around. So it was also interesting. Also around high school, I had a very small band, me and other, that on the parties of the school or something, we would go and play something. And so it was always interesting. Even during the Scouts, I had this kind of band that helped animating the events. So it was always this in and out. Then during college, I was more into orchestral music and composing things and doing orchestrations and composing these kinds of things. I even considered going as a soundtrack composer or something like that. But then the passion also for technology led me to engineering. And so I continue to that path and led me to where I am now.
So if you were taking a 3-hour drive to go somewhere for a long weekend and you were going to listen to music, what are you listening to?
I confess that I'm a big nerd regarding soundtracks. I like soundtracks. I like the sound of orchestra, but not with that classic hold kind of melodics and harmonies, but something more or less contemporary, but with orchestra. So things like soundtracks or epic music where you have this orchestra, a lot of musicians playing different instruments and almost like this hard rock with orchestra, that's where I really have a passion for.
So do you, okay, so I'm going to just kind of get in your head a little bit as far as when you're listening to music, would you rather have there not be vocals to it and really just focusing in on these different sounds and these big sounds of the music itself? Are you more lending yourself to non-vocal music?
Yeah, I tend to like a little more about orchestra. I don't know if it is a matter of really like the, because most of the times when we have a lead singer, that's the number one melody and everything, it's pretty much to support it. And when you go more for an orchestra soundtrack kind of approach, it's much more fluid. What are the instruments that are leading in each time? Sometimes you cannot even identify which instruments are actually the main melody. So I like that fuzzy thing happening with a lot of musicians. So that's for me a lot of fun.
So when you started to get more into the engineering world of your education and kind of where did the music start to overlap for you? At what point did that start to be something that you're like, you know what, I've got this passion for music. I've got the mind for the engineering aspect of the technology and the technical aspect. When did that start to find its way to kind of overlap a little bit for you?
Essentially, during the degree, one of the advantages of the place when I was taking the course, it was a lot of elective models that you can pick up. And essentially, what happened is that I started to pick up everything that could be audio related, like magnetic recording, digital audio processing, acoustics, electroacoustics. So anything that could eventually have some audio application, I've started to take all of those models. And then on the final project of the degree, my final project was creating a software to create a simulation of acoustic simulation of rooms. So I always had this thing moving on. Also at the same time when I was there, I was also attending a studio in Lisbon that had the studio. So I went there, spending some afternoons there, playing with the gear. Even during the holidays, I was working on a music instrument store. So I went there, say, okay, I want to work something, have a job for the summer. Why not working on a store full of instruments and all the equipment and be able to spend the entire day playing with all of this? And it was a lot of fun. Everything was constantly pushing me to go through to this thing with music and sound and all of those.
Let's just say, okay, you finish up with your schooling. Where was it? What was your first, what people would call like your first real job? Like, what were you doing and why did you take that first real job as far as what that opportunity was for you and what was that mindset?
So essentially what happened was that after the university, I decided, okay, I want to come back to Portugal, back to my city. And then I was offered a job in an IT company, working in IT, not any kind of audio related. And I said, okay, it's IT. I am study all of this. It was special. with a team with people that I already knew, and some of them were my friends. So I decided, okay, it seems a good job. Okay, it's not audio related. So I went there and even spent there 2 years. But then I was missing the audio side of things, not be able to play with audio and do this crazy research project. So I decided, no, I want to move to college to teach at the university, because that will allow me time to do research and do more audio related projects. And that was a shift that I have done. And then I started working on the academy with doing research and doing some projects, which led me to write a book about sound engineering. Also allowed me to do something with East West, putting the computer to sync. And then later on, I even did my PhD in singing and resynthesis and some crazy ideas.
If I was to sit here and look at kind of your career path and your interests and everything, when you went to be a college professor, that was really where it kind of just opened up all of these doors for you, because of that nuance of what being a professor is, and that is constantly educating yourself, constantly researching, constantly looking at what's next and what the students are going to encounter once they leave, you know, college, and, you know, staying on top of things that are a little bit more current in what you were going through. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, essentially being a university professor essentially means that you'll become a professional student, because you are constantly reading more things, learning more about this, learning more about that. And also allows us to have, of course, you need to give classes, and even by teaching classes you even learn things because you need to do that, but allows you to have some time to have these research problems, right, and to deeper study all of these topics, these technologies, all of those things. And that was great, because allow us to have enough time. We don't need to worry about doing something for this client or something like that, and you really can become a professional student being a teacher.
And do you still teach today a little bit, or have you moved on from being a professor?
No, I currently with Sound Particles. I stopped teaching 3 years ago because Sound Particles began to grow. The team began to grow, so I had to be completely dedicated to Sound Particles. I can say that I still do my research, I still do my learning, but within the context of the Sound Particles company now. But it was, those years were quite interesting, because I was teaching in one university computer science, on another university I was teaching music technology. So it was interesting to have this mix of different kinds of students teaching different topics. So it was quite rewarding.
So interesting because there's so many people that seem to either make the decision, I want to be a professor, a college professor, and that's just what they go to school for, and then they kind of get into it and start that teaching aspect. To have this be something that was in the middle of your career, but it seemed so purposeful as to why you chose to be a professor, and it really kind of, it kind of turned you into who you are today and made you, you know, I would say unbelievably valuable to a Sound Particles project.
Yeah, I think that the company Sound Particles was created when I was already 41 years old. But if it felt like all the other 40 years before was the preparation to do that, because Sound Particles, we will talk later on, but essentially it's a mix of topics from computer graphics and physics and audio and mathematics and music. And it was the fact that I made this strange journey going in and out from music and sound and technology and computers and IT that allowed me to give me a lot of the background that allowed me to then, okay, now this allows me to create Sound Particles and have some ideas that eventually may not be apparent from someone that only takes engineering or only takes music. So I think that it was a journey that led me to where I am today.
And I think it's so important when people are looking at their own career paths there's so much that needs to be kind of considered about what those building blocks look like, you know, along the journey, as far as how those puzzle pieces are connecting, you know, for a well-rounded career and getting to where it all kind of makes sense for you. So many people think that they have to pick and choose what they're going to be for the rest of their life and have this path and this journey. You did such a well, you know, this concept of getting more well-rounded during that middle kind of stage here to prepare yourself for this. And I think it's amazing. So you decided Sound Particles, like how long has Sound Particles been in existence? And I guess being in existence is one thing, but actually finding its success as a company and a software. So how long has it been in existence? And then what kind of triggered its success as far as being able to even be in a Hollywood studio or part of Game of Thrones or you know, Frozen 2? Like, when, how long has it been? And then when did that success kind of hit you?
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit of the story. So probably like maybe 15 years ago, more or less, I realized that the most interesting visual effects that I was seeing on movies use something called particle systems. That is a computer graphics technique where you create thousands or even millions of small points to recreate fire and smoke and dust and fairy dust and desert storms. And I thought at the time, okay, wouldn't it be nice if you could do the exact same thing with sound and have thousands of small sounds around you that would create these amazing soundscapes? But at that time, it was only one idea, like so many that we have through our lives. And then in 2012, I had finished my PhD in singing voice synthesis and some crazy ideas following the work that I've done with Mistress. And I decided, okay, now, so far, no one is using particle systems for sound. Let's start creating my own software. And as a computer nerd that I am, because this face doesn't fool anyone, I decided to, okay, let's start creating my own software for using computer graphics, but with sound, and be able to generate thousands of sounds around you. And I started creating the software. At that time, I thought that one of the major interesting applications for that would be Hollywood productions, and especially these epic battles and things like that. But let's face it, what are the chances of someone living in a city in the middle of Portugal having a software being used by Hollywood studios and these big productions? But I think that sometimes you have to be a little naive or cocky, depending on the point of view, and believing. And so I continue working on the software. And then in 2014, I went to LA to an AES convention. But a few weeks before that, I sent 5 or 6 emails to people at the Hollywood studio saying, okay, I'm doing this. I think this could be interesting for big productions. And I'm going to be in town in 2 weeks. And the first reply that I got was from Skywalker Sound, invited me to go to the Skywalker Ranch, do a presentation there for the sound design team. And then within 6 months, I did presentations at Warner Brothers, Universal, Sony, Fox, and later on Disney, Pixar, Apple, and many other places. And that was the beginning of Sound Particles. It was only a prototype at the time.
Unbelievable.
Sound Particles, the first version, came out in the end of 2015. I've created the company next year, and that was the beginning of everything.
Hell of a beginning, Nuno. That seems so. Now I'm going back to the question I asked you about if you had a 3-hour drive for a vacation and you just wanted to listen to all the different sounds of an orchestra. Now it starts to make sense of how you like to listen to sound and the details of sound in those big kind of epic, you know, volume kind of, you know, soundtracks. Unbelievable how that turned into what it is with Sound Particles. And so cool that your concept was so, I guess, unique, obviously, to get the attention the way it did so quickly in concept. And obviously your resume and credentials got you, you know, in the door that, hey, I think this guy actually knows what he's talking about, for us to look into what Sound Particles is all about. So as you kind of progress through it, how many people are part of Sound Particles, or were part of the Sound Particles project company back when all this was happening?
So until 2017, it was only me. The first version of Sound Particles was entirely done by myself. And then in 2017, when after quitting the company, I started to hire initially one person, especially to help me with the Q&A, the testing, customer support, those things. And then another developer. At that time, at some point, I also got some investment, so we were able to enlarge the team. It became 10 people, and then 20, and now we are 22 at the moment, and hiring more probably next month. So things continue.
Unbelievable. To
that. But that initial version, it was created only by myself on my spare time, my weekends, and those things.
Unbelievable. So let me, you talked about getting financing and funding and all that kind of thing. And you also talked about all the different major companies, major studio, like major companies that would possibly be clients of yours, customers of yours, and users of the software. When you went out to go get the funding in those moments when you're like, okay, I've got something here, I've got to scale this thing, and to scale it, I need funding. Did you intentionally not go to any of those major studios for funding support because you thought you would be able to, they would all be able to be clients of yours, and you didn't want to just end up at one studio and you wanted it more across all? Or did you go to some of those studios looking for funding?
No, at the time, what happened, and for me, my assessment of the situation would be that, okay, studios, they would prefer much better to simply buy a license or whatever number of licenses they'd need for a software. And especially with sound, that usually when you talk about visual effects, studios even invest a lot. But when you talk about sound, usually you simply contract some freelancers to handle that. And so I thought, okay, the studios will probably not be very interested in investing in this sound technology or this sound software. So I said, okay, I even have made something like the only company that I actually contacted regarding this was Blackmagic, because I thought that eventually Blackmagic could be interested in this kind of approach. And their reply was, okay, we don't invest in startups, but we buy startups, and they made an offer to buy some particles. But I thought, okay, now it's too soon. I prefer to continue working with this. So I thought, okay, this is not the right moment to sell
the
company. So, and I've continued to work and making some particles what it is today.
So what was the first, I would call your first where you're like, okay, this is real project with a studio or a business that, you know, started utilizing your software. What was that first one that you're like, okay, this is a big deal?
So of course, going to Skywalker Ranch to do a presentation, it's
that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And then what I think that I have that advantage, because after that moment, pretty much all the other studios, it's almost like they were saying, okay, if this is good for Skywalker, it's good for us. So come here. We also want to know more. And then the first movie to use the software was the remake of Poltergeist, that used the software for those scenes with things, the ghosts and all of those things. And then continues, it was started to grow, and at some point it was Batman versus Superman, and then later on it was Game of Thrones and Star Wars. And of course, it's quite rewarding for you to see some technology that you create then being used in these big productions. And of course, you feel, okay, we have something here. So it was this continuing interest from the industry, and then later on, when we started to also last year, we started to create plugins more for the music industry, and people continue to also engage with this kind of technology and say, okay, we'll continue exploring all of these things for the future.
How much of your growth I guess the changes, the scale, you know, the what you're growing into with the software, any changes that you're making, how much is that driven from a studio or a production that's saying, hey, we want to try to do this. We think it'd be cool if it could do this or that. How much of that input are you getting from the different production studios during a film or something and saying, hey, we tried to figure this out. Is there a way to get it to do this or that? How much of that is happening?
Yeah. Most of the times we only create the software and then the sound designers use our software. But from time to time, people come to us and say, okay, I'm doing this. I have this scene, for instance, Ready Player One, and the sound designer said, okay, we want 200 lasers crossing in front of you. How can I do this at Sound Particles? And we essentially, in 5 minutes, you can easily create a project, send the project and say, okay, it's like this. And then the person only has to import their audio material into Sound Particles that all the movement and all the effects are already there. Or eventually I recall some other moment where I was simply crossing the halls in Skywalker Sound, and a sound designer came to me, oh, you are here. Come here if you have a few minutes, because I'm doing this scene for The Mummy, where starring Tom Cruise, and I have this scene with everything, glasses breaking everywhere, and I want to use some particles for that, and you helping them. But most of the time, they simply work, use the software. What happens, of course, is we are constantly trying to listen to feedbacks from the users. And right. Some, most of the times, the ideas that they bring is not something that is a new idea, but is something quite important for us to do, prioritize things. Okay, it's the third person that mentioned this, now you should give yep. higher priority to this feature instead of other one that no one is asking for. So it's this constant relation with users. It's fundamental to help you do the product management of what the new feature, the new releases are going to happen.
And how often are you actually asked to be on a set with a sound engineer or you know, at post-production, whatever it is? How often are you asked to be like part of it versus just kind of answering questions from, you know, your home office or your...
No, that thing, to be honest, never happened. Essentially, they see us, okay, as someone that creates a software. And then, like, once again, it's almost like, okay, we are creating an architecture kind of software, and you have the architectures that draw the houses and all of that. Of course, we have some ideas, and sometimes it could be interesting ideas, but essentially what we try to do is to use YouTube channels and all of this to explain, okay, this is the crazy thing that you can do with sound particles, and try this and try that and give ideas to them. And then, okay, the sound designer simply on a particular scene.
And they take their own creativity, their own skill sets and creativity, and they run with it.
Yeah.
So cool, man. And so you're really able to stay in Portugal, like, and just have this company be based out of there. Is everybody that works for you based out of Portugal, or do you have different people all over the world?
No, we have one person in England, in London, that works with us in terms of the business model. He was a sales director from Avid for many years, and is helping us more with reseller networks and business development. But all the remaining part of the team are based in Portugal and working from Portugal. Of course, a lot of travels to the United States, especially before COVID. And probably what is going to happen is that this year we're probably going to open an office in Los Angeles. But so far, everything is managed and done from Portugal.
Unbelievable. I knew this podcast was going to be one of the most interesting podcasts I've done, because I'm not a software engineer, but you explained it so clear as far as where it fits in and what it's used for. I am absolutely amazed by it. And I think your journey in the way that you kind of created your own career, your own company, your own software, and doing it, like really doing it solo until you needed to scale, unbelievably impressive. Such an honor, and thanks so much for taking the time to be part of this podcast and share your story, your journey, and Sound Particles with us. I really appreciate it. Impressive, dude.
No, it was a pleasure. And of course, although all of this, of course, it's great for Hollywood studios and it's great for video game companies that use our software. But it's one of the things that we are now exploring, bringing this to music. And imagine what would be the sound of 500 flying violins, or the sound of 100 drummers, or even use this technology to simply create more voices and create, you have a violin, but actually you have an effect that convert that into an orchestra, or eventually using tools that plugins that allow you to pan sounds around based on sound intensity or brightness and bring more life to the mixes. So for us, this is only the tip of the iceberg. What we have accomplished so far, it's only the tip of the things, because there are so many things that you can do with all of these technologies.
Well, there's so many people that are doing all of their own sound engineering and their own albums and production in-house with their own equipment. So this is exactly what you're talking about, is being able to give a little bit more oomph to what they're currently doing and having those tools to work with. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast and taking the time.
It was a pleasure.
Great to get to know you. This was the Interstate of Music podcast with our guest Nuno Fonseca. And hey, check out Sound Particles, and not only check them out now, but stay in the loop of where they're going, because obviously, like Nuno said, tip of the iceberg. So we can't wait to see what 6 months, a year, 2 years from now, what Sound Particles is all about. Thanks. This has been the Interstate of Music podcast. This is Jeff Peterson, and Peterson is out.